Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello. Welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. But today we're going to be talking about your physical wellness power. How many of you have ever had situations that have hit you, you didn't know what to do, how to get well? We're bombarded with pharmaceutical information that supposedly is going to give us all kinds of cures, but it does not do that, typically. We're having a war that is going on relative to disease, and my guest today, who is familiar with that, we're going to be addressing a particular aspect, but I think what you'll find is this is something that is going to cover not just one particular disease, but in so many aspects, there are levels of knowledge that we really need to become acquainted with. My guest today is Stephen Booner, and his book is Healing Lyme Disease Co-Infections. Now, I myself know of some people that have been afflicted with Lyme disease, and it is insidious. We know that it comes from the tick. I think it was back in the 70s. One woman that had done a great deal of research found this, found that that's what was making her husband so ill. He was literally dying. And because of her work, then there was a lot of attention that was brought to this. At that time, it was on the East Coast. Not so much today. Stephen, you're a man that I'm just absolutely amazed at your insight on herbal medicine, on medicine itself, the interactions with bacteria and viruses, and how to work with them. How did you start in this? I mean, this is a lot of research that you've put into this book, Healing Lyme Disease Co-Infections. This is an incredible publication.
Thank you. I actually was born in 1952, and I was really close to four of my great-grandparents, and one of them was a physician who had trained in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and of course, antibiotics weren't very common then, and he used mostly botanical medicines, as all physicians did at that time, and he's the one that really got me interested in working a different way with healing and with people who were ill. He had a very different attitude and approach. Many of the people in my family are physicians, including a surgeon general and a number of other people. But his approach was one that was more simple, more down to earth, and I thought his results were a lot better. And he just sort of inspired me to keep on with this work, even though it was unfashionable.
Now, Lyme disease itself, it's been said that it's transported from deer, for example. That's many years ago I heard about this. It comes from the tick and deer, and it was something that affected people on the East Coast. But there was a lot of ignorance about this, and it induced in different people different symptoms. But they would get very, very sick. And I've known some people that when they were very young had been bitten by them, but it wasn't until they got into the 30s and 40s that this disease all of a sudden went on the rampage. And it affects the immune system. And I know of someone right now that has been put through the ringer on this, and she's almost skin and bones, and I'm hoping that it won't end up killing her. But she keeps going back, and there's antibiotics that are given over and over and over again, and she keeps getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And this is something that you address in your book, which I really respect and appreciate, because I got into an argument with someone. I said, bacteria and viruses are intelligent. They said, no, they're not. They're dead. Viruses, they're not alive. They don't know how anything. So I read your second one, you say, they are very much alive and very much intelligent. Thank you very much. And I thought, oh, this is incredible. I know I'm going to like this guy just as soon as I go through this. So tell us about bacteria, viruses, how old they are to the best of our understanding.
We're basically seeing now what are considered to be the emergence of second-generation disease complexes that are very different than the bacterial diseases that most of us have heard about and that antibiotics easily deal with. And AIDS really was one of the major things that began to teach Western medicine and specifically American physicians that their model just wasn't very accurate. Now, you know, one of the major problems that has occurred is that there was assumptions in late 19th century and throughout pretty much most of the 20th century that there's nothing intelligent on Earth except for human beings. And really, there's nothing stupider than bacteria. Unfortunately, that is not accurate. It's a very dangerous kind of assumption. Bacteria actually have really complex communication processes, a language, if you will. They build cities. They have transportation networks. Some of them even build electrical cables that actually are, they're insulated electrical cables to warm the cities that they make. Their cities are called biofilms often. They talk a lot with each other. They can actually change their genome structure. And when they encounter antibiotics, they actually begin creating responses to it to make themselves resistant. And then they pass on that information to all of the other bacteria they meet. So the newer research by people that, you know, aren't stuck in their old paradigm is extremely clear. And when you start looking at evolutionary biologist work and the work of the leading bacteriologists in the world, they're all extremely clear that bacteria are highly sentient, highly intelligent, extremely adaptable, and they've been around for about 4 billion years. The human species in the form that we are in now has been around about 35,000 years, and our science has been around about, if you're going to be nice about it, you could say 200 years, you know, maybe 150. And so we're pretty much babies on the block, and what's starting to happen is our disease and treatment paradigm from the 19th and 20th century is beginning to encounter the real world that's been out there all along. And what's happening is our technological medicine, pharmaceuticals, are beginning to fail at greater and greater rates, especially with these second-generation emerging infections, of which Lyme and the Lyme complex, the other co-infectious bacteria with it, is a major illustration of that.
Now, when we are going through all of this, and because of, we've got a plus and we've got minuses. One, technology has enabled us to advance enough where we are seeing and we are able to absorb this phenomenal interconnectedness that we have. And like you said, the newer generations of researchers are saying, we can't go by these old paradigms. And you have a quote in your book by Buckminster Fuller where at one talk he said, medicine is 50 to 100 years behind in its educational system. And that is something that I've heard said by so many practicing physicians that are wanting to approach their care of their patients differently than what they've been taught in medical school. And they get very, very frustrated because the system as it has been established works against them. And in today's world, we're having a toxicity, and you bring this out, because of the huge population. We have over 7 billion people on this planet, and we have all kinds of things that are going into our waters, and we are becoming aware that that toxicity is affecting us in a big way. And it's affecting not us, but every living thing on the planet. And bacteria and viruses, as you've mentioned, are so adaptable. They are just amazingly sophisticated. And we really should have a great deal more respect for them than we do. And you talk in your book about a couple of things that I'd never heard of. And correct me if I'm mispronouncing it. Psychotine cascade. And this has a strong association with the Lyme bacteria itself. Talk to us about this. What is it? What are...
Basically, one of the things about this emerging group of second-generation bacterial infections is that another way to think of them is stealth pathogens. You get a salmonella infection, it's pretty straightforward. It goes into your digestive tract, it gives you diarrhea, makes you sick, and it's just in there hanging out, and you take an antibiotic and it kills it. So it's a pretty obvious and easy-to-treat disease. But this second generation of emerging pathogens, they're very stealthy. And what they do is when they go into the body, they hide inside our own cells so that our immune system can't see them. And other things they do is they do things to decrease the effectiveness of our immune response. So they're pretty much like guerrilla warriors dressed in camouflage fatigues that are coming out of the jungle and you just can't see them. And one of the ways that they sort of take over our body is they utilize things that are called cytokines, which are, so if a bacteria touches a cell, sometimes what it'll do, it will release a chemical called a cytokine, which will then start to make the cell wall more porous so that it can get inside of it, and that disrupts the integrity of the cell. And that's one of the ways that they do this. And when that happens, the cell will also give off molecules that will tell the body what's happening there. And that's sort of what inflammation is. It's a combination of those things in a certain location. And one of the reasons these stealth pathogens do this, they're able to hide inside the body, but also they break apart different cellular structures in order to get food because they're parasitic. And so what happens is there's what's called a cytokine cascade in our body where a lot of these molecules are being released, causing inflammation and cellular breakdown and facilitating the bacteria's movement through our body. And that's really where our symptoms come from. So a lot of very clever, researchers now, mostly in other countries around the world, mostly in Asia, South America, Africa, and some in Europe, and very few in the United States, unfortunately, are starting to recognize that a much better way to approach disease treatment with these kind of infectious bacteria is to look at their cytokine profile. That is, what kind of cytokine cascade do they create in the body, and then begin to look at it that way. And I stumbled on this myself about almost 10 years ago now when I started looking at treating Lyme, because it wasn't easy to treat Lyme with antibiotics. And so I began developing a protocol based on cytokine cascades, even though I didn't really understand that was the way to talk about it at the time. And as I was doing more advanced work with it in the last few years, I realized a number of researchers are beginning to approach it that way, because they basically said, if you stop that cytokine cascade, what happens is the symptoms in the body go away and the bacteria can't feed, so they find an inhospitable environment and they basically die off. And it's much more effective than working with antibiotics with these kind of bacteria.
Now, that is one of the many gifts that your publication gives, because you talk about natural healing. And what I like is that in the beginning of your book, you're educating people. You're talking about Bartonella and Mycoplasma. And there is a very clear explanation of these components that create co-infection. And then you also have a section on natural healing, and I really appreciated this because you break down in a very, very easy way of understanding that you have to look at what you are dealing with as having an intelligence, number one. Number two, it has to feed, just like you said. So it is going to use your body. It is a parasitical situation. It will use your body as a host, which is natural, And consequently, it's going to consume natural elements that are in your body that usually keep the self very healthy. And you go into basic protocol, and there's fascinating information that you have in here regarding those basic protocols in your book, Healing Lyme Disease Co-Infections. But you talk about so many different components that can really work with the body. And I really appreciated and respected the fact that you said every person needs to be treated individually. And I have said that that is going to be the point in medicine. My goodness, I've been talking about this for over 20 years, that treating people individually is so very important. Now, Chinese medicine, Tibetan medicine, does this. Of course, they've been doing it for thousands of years. This is something that I hope in American medicine we're going to start becoming aware of.
Well, we're being pretty much forced to change the paradigm. Unfortunately, the way American medicine is set up, it's very much dependent on a lot of very powerful special interest groups. And I wish it wasn't that way. You know, I grew up during that kind of transition process, but right now people are pretty much looked at as kind of like cattle, I'm sorry to say, who go in one end of the system and out the other, and it's pretty much controlled by the pharmaceutical companies and the big technological interests like massive hospital chains. Doctors sort of made a deal with the devil when they did that back in the 50s, and they're pretty much caught up in it now, and it's very, very difficult to change that system. That's what happens when a paradigm begins to shift. The old system holds on very tightly. And to really change it, you pretty much have to start going outside the system. A friend of mine once said, the way to change the world is to preach to the choir, because you get the choir excited, they sing a lot more loudly, and then more people hear the song and they join in, and pretty soon what you've got is a giant choir, and that changes everything. So, you know, what you've been doing and many people are trying to create a basis of shifting. And one of the really important things is understanding that each human being has an individual ecology. Each body an organism encounters is different. Its terrain is different. Its immune function is different. And so one of the reasons why Lyme disease and its co-infectious agents are so difficult to treat is they're highly adaptable to each ecosystem that they enter, each body that they enter. And so what you get is more like a swarm of similar organisms rather than identical bacteria in each person. And that's why one person will respond to antibiotics just fine, and you'll get a bunch of others that don't. And so then you'll get an antibiotic that'll help the next person, but it won't help the third person, because what you're getting is what's called antigenic variation in the DNA structure and in the outer protein coat of the bacteria. And so basically they remain invisible to the antibiotic. And so the only way to really successfully treat the about 40% of people who won't respond to antibiotics is to look at them individually and really become a healer rather than a pharmaceutical technician. That's what we're being forced to do again, which was much more the way it was in the late 19th and early 20th century. And we're just being forced by the nature of the world and these organisms to go back to a more holistic and responsible approach.
You talk about the reason the inflammation occurs, and this is not a surprise to me at all, is the reason we have challenges, the reason cancers, and they've come out in the last 2 years, every once in a while you hear cancer is caused by an inflammation. I can't tell you how many people I've had the opportunity to interact with in my 12 years of doing this show that have said they chose alternative methods because when they went with the protocols of the methods being used in the U.S. today, often they found they were so depleted their body didn't have anything to fight with. And the protocols killed them, the cancer didn't. And this is something
that's extremely common, unfortunately.
Yes, and more people are saying, wait a minute, I've got to do something. And I have a very dear friend that was diagnosed, went through heavy chemo, and she now has sought out a Chinese physician who had, you know, has been starting a protocol for her. And she is staying with that protocol, and she was getting a relief that was just so quick, it was surprising to her. And when I'm saying that, I'm not saying that there's a magic bullet out here, because when the body's depleted, and as you say, when its nutrients are depleted, because if we don't have good nutrition, if we don't have good supplementation, and are eating good food, and I loved your word, you don't want, you want people to get out of the food fascism. Oh, my goodness. I thought that was just such a powerful combination of words. Nutrition is in, it should be in the food that we eat. So we need to understand we've got to eat well. And then combining that with nutritional supplementation, and you're very clear about this in the book, the body will work with these components, and wellness can be the result.
Right, and there's really two aspects to that. You know, the, with the whole Lyme complex of diseases, there's about seven of them total, Lyme and about six major co-infections. And the thing that they found in every instance is number one, that the healthier the immune system, the less severe the disease. Some people will get infected with Lyme, but their immune system's so healthy that the Lyme just never gets established. They might experience a mild flu-like event, and then that's it. It's over. And the more depleted the immune system, the more severe the disease, the worse the symptoms, the longer it takes to get well. And secondly, that because this complex of organisms, because they scavenge nutrients from the body, that you, they each have different kind of nutrients they like to scavenge. The worst is mycoplasma, because it makes virtually none of its own nutrients that it needs to survive. So it scavenges a tremendously large range of substances from the body. So to keep the body healthy, you have to begin to replace the things that are being scavenged from the body. And second, you need to keep the immune system healthy. You do those things and stop the cytokine cascade, and those three things together will result in virtually everybody beginning to get well, or at least their symptom picture will go way down and they'll start to have a more normal quality of life.
I was really impressed with the information that you give regarding the protocols. One of the many items that you mention, and I also want to say in your book, you give some wonderful resources about various companies that you can contact if you want to utilize certain things. I was really pleased to see what you said about seaweed, because I know that in the Asian culture, seaweed has been very, very important in wellness. And it's been a part of their diet for, well, however long they've been around. And the Tibetans, I think, had acquired, the medical Tibetan lamas were just so knowledgeable about, I mean, this took years of learning. And hopefully, we're going to have more and more of their understanding passed along to us, because they were so far ahead of the U.S. They knew how to treat so many things that we're just blindsided in. We really don't understand this. But I look at so much of this that you have in this book and these companies, and I just think this is a marvelous amount of resource that you're making available to people.
Thank you. And the thing that most people don't understand in this country is that virtually all plants are foods. It's just you don't eat, you know, it's just how much you eat is the really important thing. And the native peoples who lived here consumed massive amounts of plant substances. I mean, we're pretty much limited to about 10 or 12 green plants that we eat at the most. They would eat hundreds. Even the Kalahari Bushmen in the Kalahari Desert, which is one of the most difficult places to live, eat 75 different plants throughout the year. And my great-grandparents would eat burdock and dandelion and a wide variety of substances just as a regular part of their diet every year. So one of the things that happens is these substances work not only to correct imbalances in the body as medicines, but they also add nutrient substances that are very specific and important for health at different times of the year. And that's one of the things that the Asians have understood for a very long time, and many of the African cultures as well. The Asians consume a huge quantity of different things, and they've been interested for at least 4,000 years in what, you know, kind of plants will help correct certain imbalances or nutrient deficiencies, or just will help, you know, the immune system be more healthy. And they have a number of categories of that. You know, AIDS and cancer both have really begun to teach American physicians that their approaches toward those diseases have to be more complex, that a simple monotherapy won't work, so that they're actually starting to mimic the complexity of plant medicines in their practice in a very, very simplistic way. You know, a plant can have anywhere from 100 to several thousand different chemicals in it at any particular time. So that makes it much harder for the organisms to hide and to develop resistance. So what's happening now, even in our technological approach, is they're starting to use things which will help the immune system, that will help the different symptoms, that will have multiple antibiotic effects. So that kind of approach, there's a reason why nature does things that way. It's a lot more effective than just, you know, the kind of simple silver bullet thing that we developed in the last 100 years.
Well, I just think your information is just so insightful, because infection is one of the biggest challenges. It has always been the biggest challenge with human beings. One of the reasons that we've been able to live so much longer is because we have become more sanitary. We have sewage treatment systems instead of the way it used to be years ago, where everybody threw their poop and urine and everything else out in the streets like they did in London. Waterways were contaminated, you know, a few centuries ago, 1700s. It was horrible. And so disease was very prevalent, and you bring out specific things. And you're not against animals. You're not against any of that. And what you say is you need to know about these points of information. We are inhabiting a planet. We are the animal species also. So we can either work with an understanding of why these things are happening to us and make a change, or we're going to succumb to it. And as you said, changing the mindset is very difficult. And that's one of my joys that I have with the show, is having people like you on the air. For those of you listening, the book is Healing Lyme Disease Co-Infections. But I'm here to tell you it's a lot more than that. And if you want to have an understanding about what you can do for yourself for wellness, you want to have this book in your library. And I would suggest you have a pen and a highlighter and go through it when you're reading. Make notes in the margins. Use the book, because you may be able to affect the wellness of someone else if you're willing to educate yourself. Stephen, what is your website that people can go to find out more information about your publication?
It's GaianStudies.org. That's GAIAN. STUDIES.org.
Wonderful. Gaian, GAIAN, studies.org. Stephen Booner, this is just a phenomenal publication, and I know I'm going to be sharing it with a number of people about this scientific disposition, because so often we get into very interesting discussions, and your information can take a long stride towards, or long step towards, helping people understand how they don't have to be defeated by Lyme disease, the co-infections that come with it, and other things as well. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
You're welcome, Donna. Thanks for having me on.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Again, Healing Lyme Disease Co-Infections, Stephen Herod Buhner, and that's spelled B-U-H-N-E-R. Check out his website, guyanstudies.org. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
If you are an author and would like to be a guest on the Donna Sebo Show, please send a review copy of your publication along with a press release to the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Allow 6 to 8 weeks for your material to be reviewed. Again, the address to send your material to is the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Donna Sebo here, and if this is your first time hearing the show, I'm so delighted you've been able to join us. All you need to do is call in if you'd like to chat with me and give me your first name or initial, and then I'll tell you what I perceive about you, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that is of concern to you. And that, again, is 888-627-6008. I do want to let you know that I have been invited to be on a show in Nebraska tomorrow. And if you should be on the computer, then you can check in with KZUM. It's called Exploring Unexplained Phenomena. Scott Colburn is the host, and I've known Scott for years, and I've been a guest on his show a number of times. He's got one of the world's longest-running paranormal talk radio programs. Done once a week. He is into his 28th year. He is absolutely a wonderful, wonderful man, and you can listen to the program tomorrow. I'm going to be on between 8:30 and almost 10 o'clock. In the morning, tomorrow morning. So it's something I'm really looking forward to. You can go to www.kzum.org. And again, the host is Scott Colburn. A wonderful, wonderful man. I was so delighted to be invited to be on his show. I've had, again, like I said, a long-term association with him. Okay, we've got some great people coming up next week. Quickly, I want to let you know that we're going to be talking about domestic violence. Yes, we have heard about this horrible case where a guy enslaved three women, and he and his brothers have done appalling things. Domestic violence was very much a part of his lifestyle long before these three women were abducted over 10 years ago. Well, we're going to be addressing this. Danielle and Karen. Danielle Wozniak and Karen Allen are going to be my two guests on Monday, and we'll be discussing that. Joseph Gallenberger is going to be visiting with us, and if you like to gamble, I think Joseph is going to surprise you. He believes in PK. Now, what is PK? PK is when you are able to move items with your mind. Well, he developed an understanding of how to use the mind to affect physical change, and he does it in Las Vegas. Aha! So if you're interested in that, you're going to enjoy him. Lost History of Little People, Susan Martinez is going to be my guest. This is about people that have lived on this planet for I don't know how many thousands of years, very small in stature, extremely intelligent. You might think of pygmies. Well, there's more to the history of these little people than you'd ever imagine, so we'll be chatting with her. And then Making Your Creative Mark, Eric Mizell, is going to be my guest. And Eric has a real strong feeling about how you can take your creative self and put it to work. And then on Friday, we'll be talking with Maggie Shannon about how, as a crafter, you can use crafting whatever medium you enjoy as a way of getting in touch with your inner self and creating calm. So we've got a wonderful grouping of guests that are going to be on the air with me and with you to share their wisdoms and experiences. And it's always a delight bringing them to the airwaves. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. We often find in advertising, in marketing, when it comes to products, that because women are the primary buyers in a household, much advertising is directed towards the female. You have a section of advertising that, with children's programs, obviously they want to affect the children, and consequently the kids affect the mom's purchasing direction. Well, there have been some shifts, and this is because there is a market, the male market, that advertising is discovering that they can, and they've known this off and on, they just go in their cycles, but they are really, really aiming towards men when it comes to fans. And any woman who's married will just roll her eyes whenever her husband talks about what they call the boy toys. Because the guys really enjoy mechanical devices. I mean, I might go bonkers in the cooking section of a department store or a big wholesale box store, and I just love looking at anything that has to do with the home. Well, I know my husband, when he's in a hardware store, my goodness, he's in seventh heaven. He absolutely loves it. The guys are talking with each other, and it's just the differences between us. It's not good or bad. Well, Chrysler Town and Country 5 is really doing a super job on this because they have equipped this vehicle in black. It's got a chrome grille, 17-inch wheel inserts, black leather interior. The steering wheel is the particular color. It's a modern minivan that's being marketed to men, and that is really hitting the mark. The guys are just absolutely loving it. And do you know what? Men, there's a study that was done on this, that men are doing 31% of the grocery shopping in today's world. This is how things have changed. In the 1980s, when they were doing these surveys, women were doing most of the shopping. That's right. Women were doing most of it. Only 14% shown to be male. That is shifting. Now, this is what's happening in the big chain stores like Target and Walmart. They have now what they call the man aisles. Mm-hmm. They are stocking these man aisles with items that the fellas really like. Guys can go into these aisles, the gals can go to the other sections, and the guys are going to find all kinds of stuff that really, really they like. There is a small New York City chain that's incorporated what they call man-centric items into its guy aisle, and here's some of them. Hot sauce, beef jerky, batteries, beer. Now, it's always been there, but now they're rearranging it because more men are doing shopping. If ever you go into a mall or into any kind of a store environment and someone's doing a survey, and I've had this happen a couple of times in one of our local malls, and they'll say, we'd love to have you do a survey, would you? And they give you a gift certificate or something. And you go in and you fill out information in this quiet area, and it's used because Business is business. They want to know what markets are growing so that they can make appropriate adjustments to accommodate those markets. That's nothing new. That's been going on for a long, long time. So the guys are out doing more shopping, and they're enjoying it. And so now in the market, don't be surprised, ladies, to find the guy aisle. Yes, and if your husband disappears if you're shopping with him, of course, I don't like shopping with my husband. I want him to stay home because I always end up getting extra stuff that I really don't want, we don't need. So if a guy's with you and he disappears, check out the guy aisles. That's where you're going to find him. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Just when you think you've heard about everything, something pops up. This really made me chuckle. What if it's early in the morning, you've been out partying, and you decide you're going to send someone an email, and you're sort of looped? There are people that get that way. Well, there is something, software, called Mail Googles, M-A-I-L Googles. They will enable, you're able to put this app on your Gmail account, and it'll ask you to follow to solve a few timed math problems before you can send an email. So if someone you know has a bad habit of making phone calls when they're inebriated, or if they send nasty emails when they're in that state, this is an app you want to make sure they have on the computer. Because if you don't answer the questions correctly, your account locks up. You can't send anything. I think they've got something like that with kids, don't they? Maybe not. I don't know. If you've got kids, maybe you can tell me. And the quiz ensures you're in the right state of mind before you send an email, and you won't awaken to an angry reply. I had an experience like that with a phone call. I got two of them from someone that was just soused to the gills. They should no more have been on the phone than a man on the moon. Needless to say, their calls were not returned. But the thing is, this is for emails. Someone must have gone through a real tough time to come up with that kind of software program. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. There is a delightful quote that I came across that I thought I would want to share with you. And I think this applies to so many areas of life. And this is what a gentleman by the name of Rick Warren said. He said, emphasize reconciliation, not resolution. It is unrealistic to expect everyone to agree about everything. Reconciliation focuses on the relationship, while resolution focuses on the problem. When we focus on reconciliation, the problem loses significance and often becomes irrelevant. Now, when I read that, it made me think of an interview that I did last month regarding the Quakers and the history of the Quakers. And with the Quakers, they were about saying, if we have a situation here, what's the best way to handle it? And they wouldn't get political about it. They said, let's look at it for the greater good. How do we take something? What do we need to change to be able to resolve a situation? How do we do it? And it made all the difference in the world, and they often were able to create solutions that enabled people to make choices that better served them than just coming from an emotional perspective or a political perspective. Wow, what a difference. How can you do that in an environment so that things are amended, corrected, solved, resolved, so that you don't end up having all of this distortion, this anger, this frustration, the banging of the fists on the table, or the walking out of the room? It's an entirely different process of thinking, and it's something that I think we need to use more of, because we've got a lot of things that need to be addressed in today's world of growth, development, change, and communication is a big segment of that. So I wanted to share that with you. We're taking a break. When we come back, I'm going to talk to you about, well, a walking, talking miracle. Yes, I'll be sharing that with you and a little bit more. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a paranormal experience, such as seeing a ghost, having precognitive dreams, out-of-body experiences, or other happenings? If so, Donna would like to hear from you. She's putting together a book of 100 stories from people who would like to tell their story. If you'd like to submit yours, send an email to donna@delphiinternational.com. Again, send your story to donna@delphiinternational.com. Be sure to include your contact information as well. Thank you.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. When you're a woman and you become pregnant, there is a very special experience that you go through. And when you are into your third pregnancy, and you find, when you're 12 weeks along, that through an examination, your baby's not normal. In fact, the condition that your baby is in at 12 weeks is really scary. And that's what happened with Leanne. Her name is Leanne Marquet, and her husband is Henry. And I have the most beautiful photograph of this tiny little person. But the story behind this is really fascinating. Her third child was diagnosed with a very unique defect. What was that defect? The baby at 12 weeks of age, it was discovered, the heart was growing outside of the body. Now, this is something that is extremely rare, and they had a hard time believing it, and of course, this is very emotional for her, as she is carrying a child, the heart's growing outside the heart. The doctor said, when this occurs, usually the babies go through heart failure in the womb and die, or they're stillborn. Because in the process of birth, they might be safe in the womb, but in the process of birth, they will die. So he was quite concerned, and the physician said, for the mother, he was concerned about the mother, concerned about this child, and said, I would recommend that you terminate this pregnancy. And he said, your baby just doesn't have a chance. Well, Henry and his wife, Leanne, had a long talk about this. And because they had a couple of other children, they realized that this is something that could happen to anyone. Not that they were expecting this particular situation, but they'd often discussed what would happen, what they would do if a child was diagnosed, let's say, with Down syndrome or something else. And they had made the determination that they would go through the fullness of, or she would go through the fullness of the pregnancy. So she was examined again. The doctor said, it's your choice, and she made the choice. She kept the baby. At 20 weeks, she asked if the child was a boy or a girl. She went in for an exam, and it was a baby boy. Now, when she was going into her third trimester, it seemed she felt that this child was going to live. This is what she was feeling. And the doctors were warning her that if the baby survived the birth, its exposed heart could very easily become infected and possibly die within a few days. Well, because of her condition, they did a C-section, and her husband was with her as much as possible, and he said, we just need to have the faith that somehow this is all going to come out We'll just take it one step at a time. Well, they did the C-section. The little boy was removed and had a very healthy cry, even though he was so tiny and he was very, very weak. Well, she was thrilled because the odds of her having a survival, if he had been born in the natural way, then he probably wouldn't have made it. But with a C-section, there was a chance. Then the doctors were astonished to discover something. This tiny baby boy, the heart, yes, it was beating on the outside of his body. But there was a membrane that had totally covered the heart. And this was going to protect it from infection. They were stunned. Well, they had a name for the baby. His name was Ryan. And they had a long road ahead of themselves, and Ryan included, obviously. Not only was his heart outside of his chest, the right side of his heart wasn't working. He was 2 weeks old. He went through his first operation. He was back in OR at 4 months and again at 6 months. He was in the hospital more than he was at home. Now, the whole family would come in and see little Ryan. They talked to him. They would play messages they had recorded for him. This was very interactive, this family with this tiny baby that was determined to live. And Ryan always recognized him. Come in, he knew who his family was. He was always happy to see them. And this baby boy kept fighting. By the time he was 2 years old, he had survived more than 12 surgeries, various procedures, and his heart eventually was back in his body where it belonged and working perfectly. Now, Ryan right now is about close to 5 years of age. He does wear a plastic chest guard under his shirt, but, hey, he plays like any other kid, and the doctors are amazed at what they call this miracle child, because there were no other defects that he had other than the heart being outside of the body. She said, Leanne said, we treasure our son because we feel he was a very special gift. He wanted to live, and we wanted him to. It's a wonderful story, and I think it's the kind of story that makes us aware life is a very precious thing. It took the skill of physicians, surgeons, to do the technical work. It took the love of a family to keep the emotional environment and the love surrounding this child rich and vibrant. It took all of the components. There's no one singular thing. And above all, Ryan was there and said, I want to stay. In this experience, we call life. And he's doing exactly that. This is Donna Sebo. I know that we're just about out of time. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing this magnificent weekend, enjoy it to the fullest. Count your blessings, won't you? Look at how many things you have in your life to be grateful for. And I am very grateful for you. I'm so glad that you're able to share this time with me, tell your friends about the show, and invite them to join us too. Become a member. Become a part of the listening family for the Donna Sebo Show. We present a lot of good material here, and who knows, you may be able to save the life of someone or affect somebody's thinking in a positive way, giving them options to consider because of some of the wonderful people that we have on this program. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Acknowledge and recognize the power that you have within yourself and delight in the fact that there's so many wonderful things to learn about. You're pretty special, you know, and I'm so glad that you're in my life and are part of my audience. Spread the light, spread the good, be yourself. You're pretty special. This is Donna Sebo. Talk with you on Monday, same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.